ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Well, you'll be happy to hear. We're going to continue with our theme song. Itam satam brahma sukhanu brutya. You know that one? This is from Canto 10, Chapter 12, Text 11. Those of you that like to look these things up on your handheld device, 10, 12, 11. And I've been involved in discussing this verse for at least a week, and there's probably another 4 days of this verse and different references to this verse. The verse reads, Tam satam brahma sukhanu brutya dasyam gatanam paradaivatena maya shatanam naradarakena sakam rajro krita punya punjaha. So, it's a verse describing the super excellent position of the cowherd boys. And it follows the prior four verses that just describe what the cowherd boys do together playing with Krishna. They're a particular category of friendship. There's different names for different categories of friends. And these boys are sakhas, and sakhas implies or indicates they just play. They just play. And Krishna enjoys their company and they're playing with the personality of Godhead. So the verse says, well, we've been hearing it over and over, the satam, itam satam, is translated as the Gyanis because it describes Brahma Sukha. They're interested, they realize Krishna as Brahma Sukha. So therefore it's the Gyanis. Itam satanam Brahma Sukhanu Brutya. And then there are those that are engaged in Dasya Bhakti to the personality of Godhead. And they have that realization. They realize Bhagavan as the object of their loving service. And the third category is Mayashrita, persons who have taken shelter of Maya. And they see Krishna as an ordinary person. But all three of them, without going back and forth and back and forth as we've been doing, none of those three, the object of their perception realization is, they're far, far, far from the position of the cowherd boys that just play with Krishna. So, I'm going to begin with some references from Jiva Goswami's Priti Sandarbha. It's the last of his six Sandarbhas dealing with the prayojana, the ultimate perfection or conclusion of the bhakti process. And it begins, this is Anuchheda 153. The Lord's pastimes of sweetness are the most exalted of his pastimes. To increase his enjoyment, the Lord enjoys these wonderful pastimes with many gopis simultaneously. Srila Shukadeva Goswami, Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, and the sages and demigods know these pastimes of the Lord as the most sweet. Lord Krishna's pastimes are also described in these words of Srimad Bhagavatam, the words of Shukadeva, this Itam Sutanam Brahma Sukhanubhrutya. In this way, all the cowherd boys used to play with Krishna, this is a translation of that verse, who is the source of the Brahman effulgence for Gyanis desiring to merge into that effulgence, who is the supreme personality of Godhead for the devotees who have accepted eternal servitorship, and for ordinary persons, he is but another ordinary child. The cowherd boys, having accumulated the results of pious activities from many, many lives, were able to associate in this way with the personality of Godhead. How can one explain their great fortune? Because the previous verse is describing how they associated. And it was just like little children. Or little children are like the cowherd boys. The Lord's pastimes are again described in these words in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 35. It gives this the Sanskrit of the verse, I guess just the first line, and it's the Song of the Gopis, Chapter 35. So the Song of the Gopis is, the whole chapter is their absorption in thought of Krishna, singing with one another the praises of Krishna, and his flute playing, and how his flute playing affects everybody in Vrindavan. All the living entities, moving, non-moving, even the rocks and the clouds and the water, and the trees and creepers and everything. So here's text 15 from that chapter. When Krishna takes his flute to his bimba red lips and sends forth the tones of the harmonic scale in variegated melodies, Brahma, Shiva, Indra, and other chief demigods become confused upon hearing the sound. Although they are the most learned authorities, they cannot ascertain the essence of that music, and thus they bow down their heads and hearts. The emphasis is on this section, the sweetness of Krishna's pastimes. In this way, the demigods become bewildered by hearing Lord Krishna's flute music. And then in chapter 69, we're going to hear a verse. The devotees, this is not a translation, this is Jiva Goswami's commentary. The devotees attracted to the principles of religion appreciate the sweetness of the Lord enjoying pastimes of preaching the rules of religion in his human-like Krida Manusha Rupina pastimes. These pastimes of preaching are seen in the following words spoken by Lord Krishna in Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 69. O Brahmana, I am the speaker of religion, its performer and sanctioner. I observe religious principles to each of them in this world. So, my child, do not be disturbed. This comes later. This is the chapter where Narada visits Krishna in Dwarka, and he sees what he sees. And when Krishna sees him, he worships Narada, and Narada's like, huh? and he becomes disturbed. And so we'll hear some more. Actually, we'll hear some more tomorrow morning. Really nice. After seeing many of Lord Krishna's pastimes, Narada Muni became filled with bliss. Still thinking of the duty of preaching the principles of religion, he became worried. Lord Krishna spoke this verse to him. Then a later anuchet. Wait a minute here. Something's missing. Oh, that's what happened. Here we go. The excellence of the sweet pastimes has been shown. Since the sweet pastimes are more enjoyable for Krishna, though he simultaneously can perform various types of pastimes, the previously shown pastimes appear to be most sweet for Shukadev, Shiva, and Brahma. Then he quotes this text 11. You don't mind hearing it again. Itam satam brahma sukhanu brutya dasyam katan dasyam katanam paradaivatena mayashatanam naradarakena sakam prajo krita punya punjaha. And this is translated a little more simply. In this way, with an abundance of splendor caused by Krishna, they played with him, who was pure consciousness known as Brahman for the jnanis, who was the supreme lord for the devotees with Dasya Bhav, and who was an ordinary human child for those covered by material illusion. Then here's another verse. Oh, it's the same verse again. Text, but this is 14 and 15 from chapter 35. So this is now the Song of the Gopis again. And they've come, either the commentators say, they're meditating on Mother Yashoda, or they actually go to Mother Yashoda because they know that she's in anxiety. Krishna's late. He hasn't come back from the pasturing ground yet with his little friends and the calves. So knowing that she's in anxiety, but also concealing their particular love for Krishna, but they want to pacify this exalted mother of Krishna. O pious mother Yashoda, your son, who is expert in all the arts of herding cows, has invented many new styles of flute playing. When he takes his flute to his bimbered lips and sends forth the tones of a harmonic scale in variegated melodies, Brahma, Shiva, Indra, and other chief devatas listen repeatedly to that sound. Although they are most learned authorities with hearts in submission, they cannot ascertain the meaning and forget everything. There's another verse in the same section that says, don't worry, he's late, but you know what he's doing? Then, although they're like Sanjaya, they can know what Krishna is doing even at some distant place. They've got a mystic power. They can see Krishna on their television in their hearts and describe what he's doing because of their intense affection for Krishna. He went to the bank of the river Jamuna, Mother Yashoda, don't worry, to give the cows some water just before coming back. And then they went and took their bath in the river Jamuna, and they were splashing around, and then they put on fresh clothes, and they garlanded their heads with new flowers and flower crowns and flower garlands and flower this and flower that. And on the way back, the demigods, having descended to the earth just to observe Krishna's pastimes before he goes back to the village, they stopped, paid their obeisances in front of Krishna. Your son is getting a lot of benefit from this, so, you know, don't worry. He's delayed for those reasons, but he'll be back soon. It's one of their songs. Then this is the chapter 69 verse, Krishna speaking, and I'll read commentary. O Brahmana, Krishna speaking to Narada, I am the speaker of religion, its performer and sanctioner. I observe religious principles to teach to the world. My child, not just his devotee, but the position of Narada is very special. He's not just a Dasya Bhakta. He is a Vaikunthavasi, but Krishna is seeing him in this very special way. And he's explicitly saying, like father and son. Narada obtained happiness by seeing various pastimes during his visit to Dwarka, but he felt pain on seeing Krishna perform pastimes of Dharma. Thus Krishna speaks in this way to him. So the commentary from BBT on this verse, 10:69:40. Lord Krishna wanted to dispel Narada's distress. This is not the whole thing, it's part. Which the sage, Narada, felt because he saw Lord Krishna worshipping the demigods and even Narada himself. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains Lord Krishna's feelings as follows. As I state in the Bhagavad Gita, yad yad acharati shrestas tat tat eveta rojana, whatever a great person does, ordinary people follow. Thus, I bathed your feet today in order to help propagate the principles of religion, which he didn't do in Braja. At least not in the same manner. In the past, before I began my pastimes of directly teaching religious principles, you came and offered prayers to me after I had killed the Keshi demon. But I simply listened to your elaborate prayers and glorification and did nothing to honor you. Just remember this and consider. We heard the Keshi in the morning. Do not think that you have committed any offense by allowing me to bathe your feet today and accept the water as holy remnants. Just as a son does not offend his father by touching him with his foot while sitting on the father's lap, so you should understand that in the same way, my son, you have not offended me. So the sweetness is entering into Dwarka, although it's not the same as in Vrindavan. And outside of Vrindavan is more the Dharma Sangstha than exhibiting the sweetness and killing some demons. The killing of demons, the Acharyas say it's just secondary. It's incidental. You know, it's a big part of his pastimes, but as far as Krishna is concerned, the real important part is exhibiting sweetness and exchanging very sweet pastimes with his devotees. We say sweet because that's the Madhurya feature. So then, in an earlier section of Priti Sandarbha, 111, he writes, this is making the same reference to, no, this is Canto 12, Chapter 13. This is one of the final chapters of the entire Bhagavatam where everything's being summarized. From the beginning to end, the Srimad Bhagavatam is full of the Lord's pastimes, which give bliss to devotees endowed with a sense of renunciation. It's going to be making several things. It's giving a gloss of the 12th canto, but it's Priti Sandarbha, so it's making a comparison between those who actually participate in the pastimes. It uses the phrase antaranga, his internal devotees or confidential devotees. And then those that just read and hear Srimad Bhagavatam that aren't in that same category. There's a sweetness for both, and the sweetness is super excellent for those who actually participate in the pastimes. But there's sweetness for everyone. because they're sweet. That's the point. So the verse again reads, from beginning to end, Bhagavatam is full of the Lord's pastimes, which give bliss to devotees endowed with a sense of renunciation. And an earlier chapter, this is chapter 4 of 12th canto, for a person who is suffering in the fire of countless miseries, and even for persons who desire to cross the insurmountable ocean of material existence, there is no suitable boat except riding a motorcycle in Chicago. No, there's no suitable boat except cultivating the nectar of the narrations of the Supreme Lord's pastimes. So that's way before the summary section, chapter 13. This is chapter 4. And reference to that verse is Sat Suram in the verse. It means the Atmarama personalities, as was described in this Itam Pratanam verse. So, in the phrase Itam Satam. So, Itam Satam is translated consistently by our acharyas as the impersonalists, the gyanis, specifically the term is used, where, because it's Brahma Sukha. So there's, in this verse, 12th canto verse, it's describing the devotees, the Atmaramas who are devotees. But they are also devotees, Satam, Suram, since they relish only the nectar. The phrase Amrita Dravya means the essence of the rasas of pastimes. So there's these two categories, people that are suffering and people that want out. They want to cross the ocean of material suffering. And for both, there isn't a way to end suffering or to cross the ocean of suffering except the pastimes. And so who are those that can appreciate? The Atmarama people can appreciate. The Gyanis, they also, because they're with a sense of renunciation, these there's potential for them to relish the rasa. There's potential to relish the rasa, although their hearts are hard. This should be explained. The rasa filled with priti is best, one should consider the following two types of people who realize rasa. They are instructed, quote, drink the nectar of Bhagavatam, unquote. Those who realize this by their nature are the associates of his pastimes. In other words, the associates of his pastimes, they would all just sing Krishna's glories. The cowherd boys, they would do two things. They play and sing the praises of Krishna. And then when he did something, they'd sing the praises of Krishna and play some more. And then when they got back to the village, the parents were already singing the praises of what Krishna did that day, and then they want to hear the boys singing the praises of Krishna and then make up newer and newer songs and newer and newer musical, or, you know, they're just having a festival. I mean, nonstop festival. But it's the glorification. So their taste of the rasa of Krishna's pastimes is the highest. Whether they were directly participating or hearing about others who were participating, like the gopis, they weren't participating with the cowherd boys, or the all the other entities that heard the Krishna's flute. But they were experiencing a taste of that experience of those who were experiencing Krishna's flute song. And they weren't envious, but they were feeling ecstatic, so much so that they forgot all the material tribulations. Those who experience the rasa of the pastimes are associates, and they experience the essence of the pastimes since they are antaranga, or internal associates. Others, that's us, taste the pastimes to some small degree since they are bahiranga, or belonging to the material world. Though one may be in this condition, thinking oneself one with the rasa to be realized, drink the essence of rasa, which must be experienced since it flows from the mouth of Shuka, by his realization. Paragraph. Thus the conclusion of scripture is that priti for the Lord is the highest rasa, quoting again chapter 13 of canto 12. Srimad Bhagavatam is declared to be the essence of all Vedanta philosophy. One who has felt satisfaction from its sweet rasa will never be attracted to any other literature. Maybe Chaitanya Charitamrita. And thus, the commentary explains, bhavukaha, as those who are expert in manifesting excellent rasa. Going back to Canto 1, Chapter 5, oh, the person who serves Mukunda will never under any condition return to the material world, unlike practitioners of other processes. So Chapter 5, this is Vyasa speaking to Narada, encouraging him to do what he encouraged him to do. Prance and meditation, see, experience, compose and refine your Srimad Bhagavatam. So, the person, this is Vyas to Narada. Is that right? Not Vyas to Narada. Narada to Vyas. The person who serves Mukunda will never, under any condition, return to the material world, unlike practitioners of other processes, remembering the embrace of the Lord's lotus feet, eager for that rasa he has experienced, he will not desire to give up those feet again. Now the commentary reads, Vyas speaks this verse. I'll go check. So, continuing on the same theme, there's some of these messages repeating. It's quite okay. Jiva Goswami, in the previous Anuchet, says, quote, Srimad Bhagavatam is full of nectarian accounts of Lord Krishna's pastimes, which give ecstasy to the saintly devotees and demigods. That narrations of the Lord's pastimes are sweet is confirmed by the same verse from Canto 12, Chapter 13. Lila Kata Rasa Nishevanam. Narrations of Lord Krishna's pastimes are sweet like nectar. In this verse, the word Sat Suram, Canto 12, Chapter 13, Text 11. The word Sat refers to the Atmarama transcendentalists situated in Brahman realization, who are referred to by the word Satam in Srimad Bhagavatam. Our verse is, 10, 12, 11. Etam Satam. And the word Suram in this 12th canto verse refers to devotees who taste only the nectar of devotional service of the Lord. In Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.3, the word amrita, dravya, Remember that one? Means, quote, the sweetest nectar of the Lord's pastimes. The following explanation may be given. Although the nectar of love, priti maya rasa, for the personality of Godhead, is the sweetest of all nectars, shreyaha, various levels of that nectar can certainly be distinguished. The taste of the nectar of the rasas, as described by the word pibata, 113, pibata, is of two kinds. The first is the rasas tasted by the Lord's personal associates who personally participate in the Supreme Lord's pastimes. This perception of the rasas is the best because it is direct and confidential, antaranga. The other perception of the rasas is tasted by all others, like us. It is indirect and not confidential, bahiranga. These two levels of perception of the nectar of the rasas are both described here by the single word pibata. The nectar is like a river flowing from the mouth of Srila Shukadev Goswami, that Srimad Bhagavatam describes the sweetest nectar of love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead is confirmed in these words of Srimad Bhagavatam. Again, this reference to Canto 12, Chapter 13. Sarva Vedanta Saram Hi. Srimad Bhagavatam is declared to be the essence of Vedanta philosophy. One who has felt satisfaction from its nectarian mellow will never be attracted by any other literature. In his commentary, Srila Sridhar Swami defines the word bhavuka in this way. Bhavuka here means they who are expert in meditating on the nectar rasas. So that's devotees. This meditation is described in these words, 1519, same one. A person who has once relished the taste of the lotus feet of the Lord can do nothing but remember that ecstasy again and again. Srimad Bhagavatam 113 quoted in this undershade was spoken by Srila Vyasadeva. So I'm going to go and look, 1519. It sounds like it is Vyas. No, it's Narada to Vyas. Everybody got your handheld device. You'll probably find faster than I will. 1519. Yes, it's Narada. My dear Vyas, says Narada, even though a devotee of Lord Krishna sometimes falls down somehow or other, he certainly does not undergo material existence like others, fruitive workers, etc., because a person who has once relished the taste of the lotus feet of the Lord can do nothing but remember that ecstasy again and again. 1519. We all probably have our favorite devotees who somehow took a detour and checked out and on the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam, we can know, and Prabhupada's explanation, and from our experience too, you know, from knowing people that checked out, they can never forget Krishna. They can try and this and that. It's never the same. They're infected. Incurable disease. But it's very painful to know that persons are undergoing the tribulation that material life is. I was just thinking that just sitting here. You know, what's life like without doing what we're doing? I mean, you got to fill it up with something. And the something is just a distraction, and it's toxic, and it's... What is it? Where's the happiness? Where's the sweetness? And they'll try this and try that, and... make songs about it. Can't get no satisfaction. That was maybe before your time, but it's a very popular song by the Rolling Stones. Da-da-da, can't get no boom, 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 boom. Satisfaction. Much better than that, though. And they're dancing and, you know, flying in the sky with their LSD and, you know, come in for a crash landing. Because it's, you know, it's their song. There's no substitute. And so having once tasted, I was thinking this, when I read it before coming over and now reading here it again, I don't mind giving his name in this. Well, maybe I won't give his name. There's one devotee who was born in a Iyer Brahmin family in South India. So family worshippers of Shiva. And his wife was similar background and worshippers of Shiva. And they were introduced to Krishna consciousness, became married. And at their wedding, it's one of those torturous South Indian weddings that took 3 days. From morning till night. They must have been exhausted. And everybody else. But, you know, anyway. So the husband told me the story much later. It wasn't like right after their wedding. He said his grandfather was a avid, or, you know, his whole life was made up of reading books. He read books and read books and read books, and that was what he did. A Brahmin that read books. And during his wedding, for 3 days, he noticed his grandfather over there, without a book in front of him, just reciting something for 3 days. So out of curiosity, you know, socially, he asked his grandfather, what was it that you were reciting? He said, I was reciting Srimad Bhagavatam from memory for 3 days. And then his grandfather told him that my whole life I've been reading books. And because you became involved in this organization, I started reading Srimad Bhagavatam. And now that I've begun reading Srimad Bhagavatam, I don't want to read anything else. And he doesn't just read it. He tastes the nectar of the verses in Sanskrit for memory. Now, what he understands of the meaning, I mean, not to say he's not reading the Prabhupada's commentary, but his thing is the Sanskrit and the verses. But it's full of nectar. What to speak of? The purports and the commentaries of our acharyas to go more deeply and go more deeply. So there isn't anything that compares to it. That's the point that's being made. And there's categories of those that can taste that rasa. So we're hearing from Jiva Goswami's Pritya Sundarbha commentary, there's this, that, and the other category of persons. So the satam persons, they're the gyanis, and they're interested in Brahma Sukha, but if they come in contact, it's also nectar. Nectar like they don't know, and just Brahmasukha. It's something else. It's not the same. Certainly not the same. The gyanis that are interested in Brahmasukha are not the same as those that are in Shantaras. But those that are in Shantaras, it's neutrality or a reverential regard. Passive, Prabhupada sometimes called it. Passive, and then can contrast as active. So neutrality or passive, then active as dasharasa. So when Krishna plays his flute, this is chapter 35 now, the sweetness, they're in ecstasy. And they by sanchari bhav symptoms, they manifest that ecstasy. The hair is standing on end. This is the trees. And tears flowing from their eyes. The sap just drips from the trees. The waves reach their hands, when they hear Krishna's flute, they reach their hands in the air, that's the waves, to catch some of the dust that falls from Krishna's feet. And then suddenly, the river just becomes calm as ice. They're stunned in ecstasy. The rocks start to melt and flow, and the things that are standing still start to move. The clouds in the sky, hearing the sound of Krishna's flute, very mildly, because they don't want to overshadow the sound of the flute, but they accompany the sound of the flute. The bees, hearing the sound of Krishna's flute, they come and they make a bee sound, buzzing or humming or whatever it is, and Krishna hears the sound of the bees making their sound, so he complements their sound with his flute playing. And then they start dancing to the sound of Krishna's flute playing. It's like, wow. What a blast, huh? The peacocks, hearing the sound of Krishna's flute, they start dancing wildly. And the animals up on the hilltops, seeing the peacocks dancing wildly, they stand stunned and like painted pictures, hearing with their ears raised to hear the sound of Krishna's flute, experiencing ecstasy with tears coming down their eyes and seeing the peacocks dance. And that's every day. And this is the gopis every day meditating on how fortunate is the cowherd boy who Krishna leans his upper arm on his shoulder, that we don't have such fortune ourselves. How fortunate are these? They're not envious. They're just, how fortunate are these cowherd boys? So they're hearing about it is nice, but we're not the internal, the antaranga folks. We're the sadhakas. So we're not exactly, like a scholarly type person that might read, or a totally worldly person that might read. But even the totally worldly person that might read, it's very attractive. And here's a Lord Shiva worshiper from childhood. It's so attractive. Durdaivam Idrishim Mahajani Nandaraga. There's all kinds of taste and rasa there, but we're unfortunate because we're not able to taste the fullness or much something, certainly. Just a little bit of sharing. Having done this, every morning, every evening, every morning, every evening, every morning, every evening, every morning, for 2 months. It's transformative. And the people that come together, they just, like, it has its magic. You just forget everything. Whatever was important becomes, it's over there somewhere, not in the front. And so if as that becomes cultivated more and more, that becomes what's not just temporarily, but it just it fills your existence. It lifts the Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna, and it has the capacity to lift us from the ocean of material existence. The holy name also. And together, that it's carry out material duties for sure, and carry out material duties while always thinking of Krishna. How do you always think of Krishna when you're carrying out your material duties? The thought of Krishna becomes so prominent, at least for the residents of Vrindavan, that like the description, for example, the description is when they're doing their household duties, Krishna isn't their son, but they're taking care of the household duties for the pleasure of Krishna and because they're so attached to him. It's not a mechanical, it's not a sadhana, it's a spontaneous attachment to Krishna consciousness. And even when the goat, for example, the elder gopis, they're dutiful. They don't like run away and say, oh, forget our household duties. So when Krishna comes to steal butter, they're upset because it's interfering with their household duties because they have to go watch him. And if they go watch him, then he does some other mischief. He finds out some clever way to steal anyways. And it's just like, it's endless. They go to complain to Mother Jasoda, but it's not really complaining. They laugh. They're in ecstasy about this naughty boy. And it's described by our acharyas as part of the sweetness. Although it doesn't look, you know, if it were to happen in this world, if someone were to regularly come in your house and steal something. I mean, you know, once or twice a little child comes, but yeah, it's just like, what are you going to do? Go to their parents and look. Calling the cops. Or whatever. But you know, they have such love. They come to say, but it's with laughter. And Krishna's looking at Mother Jasoda, like maybe she's going to reprimand me. And the acharyas say, actually, that's what he wants. But she doesn't. She just lifts him up and embraces him and says, why do you do these things? So he decides to do something that will cause her to reprimand him. He eats dirt. Whether he ate dirt or didn't eat dirt, it's a pastime. So that he'll reprimand her. Then she reprimands him. Yay. It is part of motherly affection. You know, he knows that. I mean, little children don't like to be reprimanded by anyone, but he wants. So it's otherworldly exchanges of affection, and it's so mysterious and so natural and so delightful that it's not fanciful. It's Krishna, and there's potencies involved in the name, and there's potencies involved in the form, and potencies involved in the pastimes, and all these things are there. All these things are there in his pastimes. Of course, they're all there in his name. Very attractive, very enchanting and charming. And it's very sweet, very spiritually attractive. That kind of sweet. So we'll continue tomorrow. Tam satanam brahma sukhano bhrutya. Any discussion? Yes, back there.
Maharaj, you were speaking on Janmashtami Day about Tattvataha and how Jiva Goswami explains that one who understands or Tattvata means to understand both the external and the internal features of Krishna. Is there some correlation between external and internal features and Bahiranga and Antaranga devotees? What they understand?
Well, the emphasis, let me think about that. There's certainly some emphasis between the primary and secondary reasons of Lord Chaitanya's appearance. It's one-to-one correlation. But the reference that's being made here is the degrees or capacity of receptivity for experiencing the sweetness. So it's not a one-to-one correlation. Now, is there any, I'll just say it again. Sweetness experienced in its fullness, sweetness experienced in less than its fullness in differing degrees by different persons. And the focus is on the potential to experience Krishna and the sweetness aspect. I don't think it's the intention, because there's the antaranga shakti and bahiranga shakti. That's where I'm used to hearing those terms. Anyway, the internal potency and the external potency. And there are those that have taken shelter of the external potency. So the Krishna in truth, evam yoveti tatvataha, it's the sweetness and the majesty, or the Aishwarya, is the fullness, is the way that it's been described. Tattvataha means to understand both. And so we, or as we were discussing in the morning, Narada Muni has an understanding of both. And we're to cultivate an understanding of both. And when that wonderful time comes that Krishna, we are accepted in the entourage of Krishna's eternal associates in Vrindavan, by yogamaya potency he may cover the Aishwarya feature and just only experience the Madhurya feature. That's the Krishna in truth message, which isn't really the same. The Bahiranga is it's more in reference to the degree of sweetness. There's some overlap, but it's not a one-to-one correlation. Okay.
And do devotees, as they become completely purified, move into that category of being antaranga devotees? So the bahiranga devotees, as they mature in their realization.
Yes, yes.
They move to the...
Well, that's, with Krishna's mercy, they're more in contact with the internal potency and thus become antaranga bhaktas. By contact with the antaranga shakti, the internal potency, through bhakti.
So it's different than, nitya siddha and the sadhana siddha. You never become a nitya siddha devotee.
That's right.
So this is different.
Well, it's different. Nitya, taken in its literal sense, the nitya siddha never becomes a sadhana, sadhaka, and the sadhaka never becomes nitya. its categories. On the other hand, the sadhana siddha bhaktas become part of Krishna's eternal pastimes. They take part in Krishna's nitya lila. And they're not always, you know, I've got my credential says I'm a sadhana siddha. I'm not one of those nitya siddha prabhus or gopis. There's no distinction. Let's say Putana, she doesn't have a special badge in Vrindavan that says, I used to be a demon, but Krishna gave a lot of mercy. I'm the Kripa Siddha. So Prabhupada says, Siddha means Siddha. There's no distinction. Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Can you hear me through this?
Yeah, can you take the mask off? It's better.
Okay.
Dang, that's great.
I just had a comment/question. I was really surprised, like you were mentioning how the gopis would think of the cowherd boys and appreciate them, but without any envy. And I like couldn't even imagine what that would be like, because I feel like in my own head, there's like envy is always just there, like subtly in such a deep way that like if I were, not like if I were a gopi, because I don't want to think like that, but just hearing you say that, I couldn't imagine being like, oh, I'm happy for them. They have exactly what I want. Like, I can't imagine that. And even more. So I was just appreciating that. And I've learned from you that, you know, we have to hear these pastimes over and over.
Over and over.
To get that quality, or at least pray for
yes.
that quality.
Yes.
Yeah.
Effort and mercy. So, read the chapter. And read the commentary of the chapter, because their voice is glorification of Krishna, and Krishna means Krishna and his entourage and paraphernalia. So his flute is part of Krishna, and the effect of his flute upon, and you know, how they're stimulated, and they're not like, gee, I wish I had that. There's no envy. It's just appreciation. And in that appreciation, the purity of joy that they're feeling. And they forget their distress. Although they're feeling separation, they're feeling ecstasy. It's quite unique. It's totally spiritual. And another one is the worship of Katyayani. I'm always astounded by this when I go over that section. There's a standard prayer, and the Acharyas say there's a part of the standard prayer where you put in the name of the person who you want to be your husband. And they're all saying the same thing together, and they're all saying the same person that they want to be the husband of, or have as their husband. And there's no envy. There's no like pecking order, you're higher, you're lower, wait a minute, get out of the way. No envy. Unbelievable. Where is that? It's not in the material world. So their love for Krishna is not lust. Although it's a transcendental lust in that sense, so lust is sometimes used, but it's not the kind that we know. And just today, there's a devotee. Well, some of you maybe met her when she came here with her two daughters for the Gita camp, Jai Radha. Yeah. She's Chinese, and she brought her two daughters. She's now preparing to teach Bhakti Shastri, and she's learning everything from zero without having a teacher. She's just studying, and she asks me at least, you know, two questions every day, or maybe five. And so one of the chapters that she's preparing the curriculum for to teach to her Chinese god sisters, or, you know, the Chinese devotees, is envy. Dvesha, dvesha taha, and so forth. There's different derivatives of that Sanskrit word. So she wanted to know what's the meaning. And is it the same as lust? That was her question. It's part of her question. But so a dictionary definition is, it's not just somebody may have something, or somebody may have a quality, or someone may have some title, and I feel I deserve that. And so that emotion that arises when you perceive in that way is called envy. That's a dictionary definition. And Aristotle gives his one that's almost the same. So there's no envy. I mean, there's the transcendental envy, thinking, oh, how nice it would be to have Krishna put his arm around us, like the cowherd boys. He puts his arm around the cowherd boys. But it's a transcendental envy, or between the left wing, right wing gopis. It's Krishna's pleasure. It's not the material kind. It's otherworldly. And hearing it again and again not only helps us aspire for that kind, but the potency in just this, the past times and the sound vibration itself, it elevates consciousness of its own accord. We're covered, so we don't experience the fullness of it. That's what was the section that we read. But the potency is there. Keep reading. In the association of like-minded persons who want to get there. Okay, anything else? Up here? Shravan?
Just wanted to share some appreciation. Just wanted to share some appreciation as I was hearing our comment that we hear that in order to even come to the level of studying 10th canto, the process is gradual elevation in consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And as you were reading the commentaries, it seems like right from first canto itself, those who can relish the words of Sukadeva Goswami, they are experiencing that nectar coming right from first canto, first verse, first chapter. So I was just appreciating that somehow, I think even to begin studying Bhagavatam, we need to be qualified to receive that mercy from an acharya like Sukadeva Goswami to relish. Otherwise, it may be licking the example that Prabhupada gave us, like licking the honey from the bottle, but not exactly tasting the real sweetness. But it seems like those devotees can experience the sweetness right from the first canto itself.
And Vyasadeva laces the first canto little by little with that unique appreciation, little by little, even in the first canto, like this verse we just read, chapter 5, or chapter 8, where Kunti speaks about Mother Jasoda, and so forth and so on. It's from the very outset. It's not in its full-blown, fully manifest, fully matured, fully developed stage, but it's preparing the reader to come to that stage right from the get-go. right from the first three verses. I was thinking also, as she was asking her question, Sundari Radha, and I was thinking of Vaisheshika Prabhu. Because it Prabhupada used this phrase, transcendental competition, and comparing it to the gopis, that he said, no, it's good that you know, Tamal Krishna Maharaj is competing with Ramaswar, is competing with Bhagavan, and who is going to be number one on the book distribution chart. And Prabhupada was encouraging it. But like, you know, because you brought this to my attention, newer and newer ways to increase worldwide book distribution is the meditation of Vaisheshika Prabhu. As busy as he is, and in this and that, and you know, the book distribution in Silicon Valley is humongous, but he already had, he is way out ahead of everybody thinking. I don't know if you, the rest of you in the room know, but his, I don't know if it's his, but he's pushing it forward that, those who contribute, who are purchased and make gifts of Srimad Bhagavatam or whatever, their names will go to Naimisharanya on Bhadra Purnima, and there'll be a big festival, Yajna in Naimisharanya, which is, we visited. It's the place where Shukadeva Goswami spoke Srimad Bhagavatam. And, you know, it's for the world. The whole world. The yajna for the people in the world that in Naimisharanya in their honor and Bhadra Purnima. I mean, that's transcendental competition to its highest degree. Who knows where he's going from his non-envious devotional service, thinking of expanding book distribution in this way. Really nice. Anything else in the room? We probably have some online questions. Okay. Give him.
Vishalaksha Prabhu's comment, question. He says, Krita Punya Punja of Gopas refers not to material piety, rather spiritual piety or devotional service done in their many lives to associate and serve Lord Shri Krishna.
Yes.
Kindly enlighten me.
Well, he just did. You've been attending the classes that prior to this, and elaborately and elaborately and elaborately and elaborately, that point has been made. It's not material piety that's being spoken of. It's volumes and volumes and volumes of devotional service, that kind. Next. That's it. Anything else in the room? We're ready to go. She's got something more.
I heard you say a few times during this visit that the Rajvasis do not know material tribulation.
There's a verse that says that.
And in the morning class, you were mentioning that, you know, we're almost coming to the point where Krishna is going to be leaving Vrindavan, you know. So there's this, it's building up that, and the sadness is going to be coming now, you know, the Vrajavasis. And yet they don't know material tribulation because that is a completely spiritual ecstasy.
Yes, yes.
Or like you mentioned in the class today, Mother Yashoda was very worried because her son had not come back from the forest. And
that's an ecstasy.
So none of these are material tribulations. So they don't know material tribulations.
Yes. Here's a detail. See if I can remember the Sanskrit word. There's a Sanskrit word for anxiety. I can't remember the word. And in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he identifies in different categories of Bhakti Rasa, there's Sanchari Bhavs, and it's a type of Sanchari Bhav. The one of the examples of anxiety, well, he gives a definition. You have something and you lose it. You wish to achieve something, you don't achieve it. Or obtain something, you don't obtain it. And there's a certain emotion connected with that event. And it has a name. You know, it actually, he says it's pondering on. But pondering is the act, and then there's the effect of emotion. So the emotion is an ecstasy. It's a Sanchari Bhav. It brings about bodily transformation. And Sanchari Bhavs are described in the ocean. A wave may rise and fall. So it's temporary. It's a fleeting, it's not permanent. There's not the Sthayi Bhav. It's a temporary emotion that rises and falls. So it, when Vasudev warns Nanda Maharaj, there may be danger, better be careful. He's feeling that feeling. But it's not a material emotion, not a material tribulation. Then he gets back, and another time, and there's a twin Arjuna trees fell over. And he has that same feeling. But it's the purpose of, I haven't deeply studied, some devotees have, the science of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, but bhavas are, in general, generally speaking, they're ecstasies, there's like a wave. And then when waves mix, it becomes rasa. And the rasa is a manifestation of the sthayi bhava, which is compared to an axle, and there's the turning of the axle. The bhavas turn the axle. So we say the five primary rasas, but it's five sthayi bhavas that becomes rasa by stimulations with these ecstasies of different kinds. This kind, that kind, the other kind, and there's a whole science to emotion. Transcendental emotion. So there's no, their ecstasy is so great they don't even feel, they don't perceive material tribulation. Krishna leaves. Oh, and it's horrible. But it's not a material tribulation. It's true in Ram's Leela also. I mean, without going into details. All the sadness and this and that and the other thing, and Sita's being kidnapped and all the horrible things, and it's an ecstasy. It's a puzzlement, because through the material lens, it doesn't look like ecstasy. It looks like misery. And we don't want that. We want, so therefore, impersonal. Or we'll go to the sweetness side. Vasudeva and Devaki did not experience the childhood pastimes. They did not experience those intense feelings when Krishna was encountering different demons. They didn't even know about it. They're in prison over there. So they went through the tribulation of parenthood. So which would you rather have? And you know, the resident of Vrindavan get all the full range of emotions, where there's no material tribulation, but it's a full range of emotions. And it's just different varieties of ecstasy stimulating their sthayi bhav, their primary relationship with Krishna. It's quite mysterious. To the material calculation, doesn't compute. And who can appreciate it? Those who have, whose hearts are free from bodily identification is the starting point. Brahma-bhuta, prasanatma, na sochati, na kangsati. Yeah, go ahead. Sanchari's got one, right? She's always got one.
This is a bhakti melody, actually.
Really? Okay.
Besides the appreciation for each other, is it possible for the associates of the Lord to develop a desire to change their roles?
It's possible. Tamal Krishna Maharaj asked Prabhupada this question. And Prabhupada's answer was, the spiritual world is not static, it's dynamic. But he didn't elaborate. But the question was as specific as hers. And, you know, through association, one may develop a hankering for something, as in the material. As in the spiritual, so also in the material. So by spiritual association. But it's not that, for example, there's Uddhava and there's Brahma who are most learned and they've got the big picture. They know Bhagavan like anything. They wish in their next life to become some type of entity. In Uddhava's case, it's a blade of grass, but in Brahma's, it's whatever. So some dust from the residence of Vrindavan can come in my head. So they may wish to become a Brijvasi in a humble mood, but that's not her question. Her question is the change of rasa. And Prabhupada's answer was, it's possible. And those things become possible through association. But they're satisfied. So it's not like, hey, the grass is greener over on that side of the fence. I want to get some of that grass over there. There's no envy. Like, but it's possible. Krishna can make anything possible. Something else?
Yeah, a few more. I'm not sure whose this is. I've asked the name, but the person asks, Maharaj, I know ISKCON has focused its book distribution efforts on the college campuses, but do we also send Srila Prabhupada's books to our political leaders, or would it be a waste of time?
No, not at all. I don't know where this person gets the idea that our focus is in this audience or that audience. Not so. I mean, our devotees like to go where there's receptivity, but devotees go all over the place. I just got, for example, I just got a report from Paramakaruna when he was up in the upper peninsula of Michigan in something or other place, and they were going to parking lots at Walgreens, and he said practically everybody was taking a book. Because they were like really simple people, they weren't distracted by glitter and glamour, and so they were happy to take books, even with his mask on. He was having a nice time. And just today, Devamrita Maharaj sent me a photograph of the Prime Minister of New Zealand, I forget her name, She recently got a book, Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. She's holding Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita with a picture with the person that gave her the Bhagavad Gita. And, her comment was, I've always wanted to read this book. And then Maharaj's comment, it's not the same as Trump. I don't think he'll mind me quoting him on that one.
This is the person who asked that question is Bhakta Sean. And he said, I had the honor of serving Maharaj many years ago in Chicago.
Okay. Okay.
Next question is Varsana Mataji. She asks, as I'm hearing Vrajavasi's heart filled to the brim with these ecstasies, I'm marveling how Srila Prabhupada still had space for souls like us.
Mm.
How was it possible for Prabhupada?
Well, love and compassion. Love for his spiritual master and the order of his spiritual master on his head, carrying it as his life and soul, or his heart. And then, you know, you read how Prabhupada, or hear how Prabhupada spoke in classes, and it's, you can hear it in his voice. He's calling out with compassion. He was driven by compassion, and it comes out very strongly. He wants people to not have to suffer. And he knows how they cannot have to suffer. And he wants them to receive it. Sometimes he has to say it really strongly. But, you know, with power and with vibrato and with emotion, compassion. Love and compassion. You know, in real sense, real practical sense. So he was foregoing his own relishing of the nectar for that purpose. Loving compassion, driven. Next.
Sanjari asks, she says, the only question I have seems a bit silly compared to the discussion happening right now. But due to encouragement, I'll ask it anyway.
Okay, and you're encouraged. Feel encouraged. We're counting on you every class. Say something.
To be a pure devotee, one has to have true humility. Yet to be truly humble, one does not consider themselves a pure devotee. Do pure devotees know their own status?
Yes. I think a good way to understand what true humility is and how does a pure devotee understand their true status is listen to Prabhupada or read, as you're doing, you're reading those who had association with Prabhupada and how he exhibited both features. And just like, you know, you, or let's say, a pure devotee, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is an example. He was Kaviraj. And he knew Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. He was hearing it every day for hours, every day for hours, every day for hours from Raghunath Das Goswami, a Prayojana Guru, who had direct association with Lord Chaitanya. Wow. And Radha Kund for hours every day. So they asked him, you know, people won't get the chance to know all these pastimes directly. Can you please write? And he was feeling unqualified, although he was qualified. And he did it anyways, because he got the blessings and the Vaishnav's order carrying on his head. So he did it. And how can he do it? And you know, you can't write about Lord Chaitanya's pastimes unless you're pure. I mean, you can't do it effectively unless you're pure. And so he speaks or writes lower than a worm in stool. That's pretty low. And it wasn't just like poetic cuteness. He felt, but what carries the person who's spiritually qualified and feeling therefore very genuinely humble forward is the order of the superiors. And what, so one moves forward. So they, you know, just like you know, to some degree at least, And we all know, to some degree at least, the contaminations in our heart. And, you know, we can pretend something, but we know what's, we know at least to some degree, the contaminations in our heart. So a pure devotee certainly must know, but they're feeling this profound humility. They're aware. And they're the profound humility feelings at the same time. Next.
This is a question from Meenu Akshaya. Do the Gopikas or other Vrajavasis come back to this material world as spiritual leaders or some sort of some sort to spread Krishna bhakti?
If Krishna orders them, sure. They do whatever Krishna wants. That's it. That's it? Okay. Anything else in the room? Yeah.
So I've been thoroughly enjoying watching Falling Srila Prabhupada in the last week or so. It's very nourishing. And just the number of devotees that joined the movement was overwhelming. And then we had this discussion today about how people, when they get the taste, they never leave it. They never forget it. Mm. Even though they check out, was the term you use. So, my thoughts are going to the number of devotees who have left the movement. So, and I'm trying to understand from Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, you know, those who have fallen from the path, in their next life they'll be given an opportunity, depending on their stage of advancement. Some will be born in the families of brahmanas or wealthy persons, or if they previously quite advanced, then they enter into families of Vaishnavas. So, is there a difference between at the end of one's life still attempting to progress spiritually and then the next destination versus someone who's just checked out but has had that taste of bhakti, and then what happens to them in the next life?
If I've understood your question correctly, there's definitely a distinction. There's so likely of the three options: go to the heavenly planets, come back down again, take human birth in one of those conditions, or just take birth in one of those conditions. Don't have to go roundabout heavenly planets, then back down again. Or the third is just take birth in the family of devotees, and so of them, that's far more favorable. Because of reasons. They have to wait till someone comes along to teach them because their mother and father are teaching them because they've taken birth in a devotee family. And then there's different qualities of mothers and fathers that can pass on bhakti. And so, yes, there's a distinction between those that checked out and but the impression of Krishna is there. And those that are right up to the end of their life have been progressively striving to go further. Destinations are made appropriate for those different situations. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, and I was thinking about Neha Vikrama Nashosti. So even if they've performed a little bit of devotional service and have checked out, then they will at least get a human life.
Yes. Yeah. They won't have to see Yamaraj. Okay. Prabhupada ki jai. Yes.